Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm back here with Allison with an I.
Hey.
And Allison with a Y.
Hello.
Our new co-hosts back for their second episode of all time. If you didn't listen to our last episode about Bone Tomahawk, go check that out for sure. Great movie, frankly, and the discussion was a banger, but we are here today to discuss Allison with a Y's pick, The Autopsy of Jane Doe. Allison with a Y, why was this your first ever pick as a new co-host of Every Horror Movie on Netflix?
Great question. So I saw it. I saw that it was corpse-centric, as I said in the last episode, and that was intriguing to me. I am a bit of a true crime fan, so I was like, an autopsy? Hello, this sounds interesting. And that was pretty much why I went for it.
Nice. Well, I'll give a quick synopsis here, as I did last time. We're trying in this new era to be a little more thorough, but also concise with our synopsizing of these movies. So, The Autopsy of Jane Doe opens at the scene of a multiple homicide in a small town home. A young woman's remarkably well-preserved body has been found half-buried in the basement, seemingly unrelated to the other deaths upstairs. From there, essentially the entire movie is set in the morgue at the town coroner's office, as the coroner, whose name is Tommy, he's played by Brian Cox, and his son Austin, who's played by Emile Hirsch, conduct their autopsy on the Jane Doe. As they try to unravel the mystery of how Jane died, their autopsy reveals increasingly puzzling clues and eventually seems to trigger supernatural events in the morgue. So, Allison with an I, you and I have seen this movie before.
That's right.
It's been a long time for me. I watched it with my old co-host, Steven, many years ago, maybe even before the podcast started. And I remember it being a rough day for me. I was like sick or tired or something. I just remember not being like super engaged with the movie. I didn't enjoy it very much.
Oh.
I'll say like no spoilers on my review yet, but I enjoyed it a lot more this time. Mm. What was your experience the first time? What did you remember about this before we watched it for the cast?
I liked it. Mm-hmm. I remember being excited when I heard about Allison with a Y's pick because I would get to rewatch it. And I have seen it a handful of times since my first time. I did think it was scary, so I was excited to revisit that feeling. Fun fact, it was my daughter, my 16-year-old daughter, who's becoming a budding horror lover like myself. This was her first ever horror movie.
Whoa.
Which that's so cool.
Yeah, big deal. She didn't watch it with me. She watched it while she was in California with her dad, and she watched it with her big sister, who... she's watched a lot of her first horror movies with. Mm-hmm. But she reminded me of that when I was watching it the other night. And I was like, that's so fun. I was excited to rewatch. It had been a couple of years. But again, I'd seen it a handful of times. So it was maybe my third or fourth time seeing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But this time I paid a lot closer attention because I knew it would be, you know, debriefing and analyzing in a different way than just a casual watch.
A fun note for, again, very long time Amon listeners, this is an IFC Midnights movie, which in the early going of the show, we associated like a certain level of prestige with IFC Midnights. I think it was almost like kind of the way people talk about A24 movies.
I was just going to say that.
And then like very early in the show, we were like, they're pretty hit or miss, but I feel like this is more in their hit column. It was just a funny blast from the past for me because I hadn't seen that logo at the beginning of a movie for a long time. But interesting setup for this movie because it's essentially a bottle episode. You see, as I said in the synopsis, you see this house at the beginning where these murders have taken place, but for the vast majority of the movie, we're locked in the basement of the morgue with just Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch and the corpse, and that's it. How did that work for you guys?
Oh, there's so much horror just in being in a place that you effectively can't leave. Mm. That trapped feeling adds so much to it. And as the audience, like, you're screaming, you're like, you got to find a way to leave. Like, yeah, you got to get out of here. But it makes it so much better. It really increases the tension. Like, it's physically hard for me to watch those because it is truly terrifying. But I think as a storytelling mechanism, I love it.
Yeah. That morgue was the kind of place that I would have, like, loved to explore as a kid. Just any creepy places like that. I'd be like, how do I get in there? And who do I talk to about just walking around and, you know, feeling the vibes? And the building itself, the rooms were really kind of dark and draped in, you know, like, I don't know, even like textures that were just macabre, you know. Obviously it's a morgue, but it felt like it was in this historic building, right? They made reference to this business as it was a family business, mm-hmm, and goes back 100 years or something. It was in a really old house, I think.
I think it was actually a Gothic Revival architecture too, if Love I'm that. Not mistaken.
Oh.
So I think it was in a
architecture chat.
Yeah, fun fact.
I love it.
I think it was in a house, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that kind of house, I would drive by and be like, how do I get in there?
Mm-hmm.
So I felt very much like I am terrified also of being trapped in a place like this, but sign me right up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I loved that it was mostly one location,
mm-hmm,
which became a character in and of itself, you know, the house.
Yeah, I agree very much with Allison with a Y, just the the cramped confines of this room, and it's scary. Like, we talked about this during the movie, but I don't know if y'all have this too, but sometimes I get into fantasizing about backup careers. Like, if I needed to pivot, what I would do instead. And every so often I'm like, cause I actually have a couple dear friends of mine are in the, what'd you even call it? The funeral business,
yeah,
you know, mortuary yeah, science. Yeah. And I think of that every once in a while, mostly when I think about the collapse of society in general, because I'm like, job security.
Yeah.
You know,
people will always die.
Yeah. And people are still going to probably prioritize taking care of their loved ones when they die.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, I just couldn't do it. It's too inherently creepy for me. I don't like the idea of being around dead bodies. I don't like the idea of being alone with a dead body. And so that alone just sets up a great premise for this movie for me. Just being locked in a room with a body that no one knows where it came from, and there's something off with it. And the number of shots of this corpse where it's just like there's that weird Mona Lisa, not quite a smile, but there's something about the expression on her face, which changes notably at one point in the movie, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. Great choice. And so just all that adds up to a very unsettling atmosphere.
And she was one of, what, three or four other corpses.
Yeah.
And she was by far in the best shape. I mean, she looked pristine.
Yeah.
Yes. There wasn't a scratch on her compared to the others. You know, we saw that shot with Emil Hirsch's girlfriend, Emma. I guess she came down for a peek and wanted to indulge in her curiosity, her morbid curiosity. And some of the other bodies were, you know, what I would imagine a morticianer sees regularly. But yeah. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, the Jane Doe is borderline sexualized in the first shot that we see.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, her back is kind of arched, like she's in repose, and a breast is very conspicuously
exposed. She's got those good tits.
Exposed.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's got some incredible tits for a corpse.
Yeah. Sorry, everyone.
But this wouldn't work. Like, this setting wouldn't work if you didn't have some kind of escalating tension. Because this is like a writing exercise, almost. Like, write a screenplay that's just in a morgue and make it interesting.
Mm.
You know, how do you do that? And it becomes interesting because they continue to discover weird shit about this corpse that puzzles them.
And they up the stakes as it goes.
Yeah. I mean, they notice that she has an abnormally small waist. What are some of the other weird clues that pop up as they go along?
The peat moss
that's under, like, her fingernails.
In her hair.
There's her lungs are burned.
Yes, that was weird. There's scarring on some of her internal organs.
Mm-hmm. Scarring inside her vagina, which is horrifying.
Horrifying. The broken wrists and ankles, but without any bruising on the outside.
Yeah. So it's this, you know, it's a mystery. Like, clues continue to pile up as they go along, which is a fascinating way to structure the story. And I was super engaged with that.
Yeah.
How did you all feel about the payoff to that mystery? Like, we're going to get into it in the spoiler room, like, exactly what happens. But I'm just curious about the response, like, how you felt about the answer to this saying what the answer is.
Yeah. I didn't see it coming.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I totally loved it.
Yeah, it was a really creative place, I think, to take it. And yeah, without getting into it, I was not anticipating it. Because as the movie was going, I was trying to solve the mystery in my head. I'm like, this feels like a murder mystery in just kind of a unique setting. And so I was trying to, I don't know if I would have ever guessed it.
No, that was a big twist. Mm-hmm. I had forgotten about it too, to be fair, because I watched it with just casual watching prior to this, but I was like, I know that there's a twist here and I can't remember what it is.
It's like the big scene we talked about from Bone Tomahawk. I had zero memory of what the resolution to this was.
Yeah. And until that point, it felt very much like True Detective-y, which love that show. You know, like there's elements of, was it a ritual? Was she sacrificed in some way? Was it satanic? Mm-hmm. And surely all of those things could have been true if not for her body having had no external wounding. Mm-hmm. That turned things up to a supernatural kind of place.
Mm-hmm.
Allison, with why I'm curious, because you said, you know, you connected to this because you have a fascination with death and the rituals associated therewith. You know, how... Because I don't know shit about mortuary science. I don't know shit about autopsies. You've watched a million more things along these lines than I have. Like, how did this track? How realistic, I guess, was the autopsy process and the depiction of all that?
Yeah, I mean, I immediately noted the Y incision that they made into her chest. And I was like, I know that move.
Yep.
And how they were meticulously analyzing her organs. I think with, like, you know, particularly kind of crime scene investigation sort of things, the way that they were looking under her fingernails and stuff like that. I mean, obviously it's heightened, but to me, as somebody who's interested in this kind of stuff, it had a level of realism. And I really loved the depiction of their bewilderment. It felt like, you know, that would be how people would respond to these things. Be like, this doesn't make any sense. You know, trying to sort of put the story together of her death. But yeah, anyways, the autopsy felt very... realistic to me, with the exception of, like, the corpse looking pristine.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously we already knew that was established that was not normal.
I like the use of the, like, whiteboard and the Polaroid pictures that they were taking. And that felt very much like I could see someone in this field having their own way of documenting anomalies or just painting a, you know, a picture for themselves of what happened, you know, like the what and the how of the death. But I liked that particular choice that they made to use, because that comes into play later. And we'll talk about that.
Well, and I like that because it fit into Brian Cox's, Tommy, the character's name is Tommy's, whole perspective of, I don't care about the why. Like, he makes that very clear to his son a few times. He's like, I don't care. My job is not to say why. My job is not to establish motive. My job is to establish how this person died.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting approach. I'm sure, you know, any coroners listening, they're like, yeah, that's the approach. But to me, as a non-coroner, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, their motive is not the issue here. It's just, why the hell did this combination of factors lead up to this person dying? That was interesting to me.
I did kind of have, like, one question, and maybe it's just my own ignorance, but I thought it was interesting that the funeral home was doing, like, a crime scene autopsy, like a crime autopsy.
Oh, that's right.
Because usually there's, like, a county coroner, as far as I know, or, like, you know, there's coroners that are specifically with the police departments, So, I mean, maybe it was just like a small town and it's like, that's just how they do it there.
Well, I think the police officer that shows up, right, has this sense of urgency. He brings her body in after he's already brought in the husband and wife that she was found in the basement of and was kind of like, we need her. We need an answer on her tonight because this is going to be like a PR frenzy. We can explain if it's murder-suicide, we can explain that, but we can't explain her.
Right.
And so I guess, you know, for the sake of moving the film along, that's the decision that they made. But yeah, ordinarily there would be like a homicide coroner.
Right.
But then later in the movie, son, Emil Hirsch, makes a note to the sheriff again and says, like, it would have been really nice if we were able to come to the crime scene and see that. Like, they sort of made reference to, like, this has happened before, that you've brought us these cases and we haven't been given access to the things that we needed. So, I don't know. There was sort of a undertone of, like, frustration there.
Yeah.
We don't have, we're not getting what we need.
Yeah. And it could just be the case that like they just live in like a semi-isolated area that like the county coroner or the coroner just also happens to be the people who run the local funeral home.
Right.
Which I'm sure is not that uncommon.
Right.
Yeah. 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 It felt very small town. And I didn't even think about that detail while I was watching it. But yeah, that makes sense that the coroner would not just be in the basement of the funeral home doing a crime scene autopsy. So this movie is very interesting. Again, like we talked about the bottle episode factor, but it's, you know, what they call in the business a two-hander. It's just Brian Cox and Emil Hirsch in a basement. How did their characters and their performances connect with y'all?
I loved it. I thought... I don't know. I thought they really did well with the father-son dynamic, the son who's mentoring and aspiring to take over the business, although his aspirations were not to do that. He was sort of placating his dad. It later came out that he was going to need to break the news to him that he didn't want to carry on the family business. But I felt like that father-son dynamic was pretty accurately portrayed, and it was interesting enough. I really like both of those actors a lot, so that helped. Mm-hmm. But Brian Cox, I think, is just an incredible actor.
Oh.
I just adore him.
Yes.
Yeah, I think Brian Cox, like, obviously he is amazing. Anything he does, he's such a presence. And Emil Hirsch, I thought, held his own against him, which I don't think is necessarily inherently easy to do with somebody who is such a presence like Brian Cox.
Formidable.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I've always loved Brian Cox, but I, along with the rest of the world, I think have developed new appreciation for him since Succession. But, I mean, the dude could do anything. He could do the shittiest script imaginable and still, like, make it feel so lived in and bring gravitas and just, like, that curmudgeonly fucking thing that he does. It just always works. It was weird seeing Emil Hirsch in this because... he, at least to me, has kind of fallen off my radar. Like, he really had a moment there in, what, late aughts, through the tens, maybe? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that guy existed.
Yeah.
Like, and, like, yeah, he does. He holds up well enough against Brian Cox. He does what he needs to do.
Yeah. He's adorable.
Yeah.
He's of our generation, right? I think he's 39.
I think so,
my age. And I feel like at one point he was like a... not even a B-side heartthrob. I think I saw him in like Lords of Dogtown and was just like that hot little skater.
Yeah.
I mean, he's adorable.
Yeah.
And he's aged well. And I think, I mean, I like him as an actor. I forgot that he was in this and was kind of delighted to be like, oh, hi, Emil. Where have you been?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Same.
Yeah. The interesting thing about this, I was shocked to learn this when I was reading up on the movie afterwards. But the movie is actually kind of technically, I said a two-hander, but kind of technically a three-hander because the corpse is actually played by a physical actress laying on the table for most of the movie. Like, they did have prosthetics that they used in some cases, but it was mostly an actress who was very intentionally cast. And the director, Andre Overdahl, said basically that she held everything together. Like, she made everyone else feel comfortable by her presence there. And I think it explains a lot about, like, I mentioned, you know, sort of the Mona Lisa smile effect with this corpse. And it makes so much sense that it wasn't just a hunk of plastic laying on the table most of the time. It was an actual person, because it feels real. And it's not just like the ticking clock that you get from this movie where it's like, okay, something's off, especially as things get more supernatural. It's not just the effect of that, but it's a human that you're looking at who ties this thing together without a single line, let alone like opening her eyes ever, you know?
Yeah, she is a presence.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was genius to use an actual actor.
Really for smart that choice.
Because you feel her.
Yeah.
And it's just so well done for somebody who just lays there. And I mean, and is a very, very, very convincing corpse, because I think, Patrick, you said that they picked her in part because she was very highly trained in yoga and so had incredible control of her body.
Yeah, of her breath, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that, oof, I, not a flinch.
No.
Yeah.
And there were a couple scenes where she was in what seemed like an uncomfortable position for a long time, like even just having her head propped up on that block at a really awkward angle. Mm-hmm. Like that couldn't have been comfortable. I mean, for more than a couple of minutes.
Yeah. 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 I was stunned when I learned that. And then it made so much sense to me. Like, I really think it is a super smart choice on their part for, you know, what a character the corpse is in the movie. The autopsy got to me.
In what way?
It was graphic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked like an autopsy.
Right. And I think that's just an interesting point on violence, I guess, because I love a gory movie, but something that's over the top. And just an autopsy, it feels so realistic and so clinical, and there was just stuff that kind of made me cringe. And not in a sense that I thought it was excessive or didn't have a place in the movie. It was just occasionally rough for me. Like one of the most cringy, in the classical sense, like that I cringed at it, and not in like, you know, the zoomer sense of like, ooh, that sucks. But one of the most cringy things I've ever seen in a movie, cringe inducing, is Silence of the Lambs, pulling the moth out of the corpse's mouth. It's just like, ooh, I don't like it.
Yeah, and this, there was a good amount of that.
This hit me in the same way. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, literally.
A lot of pulling things out of things.
Yeah.
What comes out of her nose? A fly or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was icky.
Yeah.
That is so interesting, because you can handle gore if it is like a person who is dying. You're like, cool, fun. And I can't handle that, but I can watch autopsies any day.
Yeah, it's the realism barrier.
I'm the same way. I'm the same way. And anytime there's anything with teeth, it's like I can't handle teeth being pulled out or like fingernails being ripped out. It's like anything that actually could happen to you.
Yeah.
Feels like anything that's more likely to happen to you than like being, I don't know, having your head bit off by a shark or something.
Right. Because I think in like the gore fest that I like, the violence is so over the top that I know not to take it seriously. I might have that you kind of moment, but mostly I'm just like, that's ridiculous. I mean, a good example is like Bone Tomahawk that we just talked about. They have the same fucking kill in Terrifier. Like the Art the Clown hangs a girl upside down and cuts her the exact same way the guy gets cut in Bone Tomahawk. And in Terrifier, I'm like, and I said this on the episode, this is the exact like phrase I use. I'm like, oh, look at that. You know, it's just like, it's just, to me, it's silly. And I'm thinking about the craft more than anything. But if you give me a moment that feels real, like it does in Bone Tomahawk, I react totally differently.
I'm with you on that one. I feel interesting. The same. Yeah, the autopsy didn't bother me. But again, I think I'm with Allison with a Y in that, like, I love true crime. I follow some, like, morticianers on TikTok and, like, love to hear their stories of and like look at crime scene cleanup, even though it's grim. It's like, this is part of, you know, the mystery surrounding this death or whatever. Yeah. So things like this, I guess this is the exception for me in that it did feel really clinical and it felt very much like science. And then I could separate the horror from that because it was means to an end, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the clinicalness of it really is where, and also just like knowing that once it gets to that point, like they're dead. and they're not feeling pain. And I struggle with the gore and the violence because I am imagining the pain that those characters and the pain and the just like the psychological horror that those characters are going through. And that's what I really struggle with when it comes to gore typically. So when it's just an autopsy, I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's just, it is just a dead body.
It's science.
Yeah. Right. Cause you're extremely empathetic. And so like you will pick up on, you don't like seeing people feel pain.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really, really struggle with that.
Yeah. And a corpse can't feel pain.
That's right. Exactly. Well, presumably.
I was interested to see, so I mentioned the director's name before, but it didn't ring a bell for me when I first looked up the movie. When I went into his filmography, I was surprised to see he had directed a couple things. I had seen Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark and The Last Voyage of the Demeter, as well as Troll Hunter, which I have heard really good things about but haven't seen. How familiar were y'all with any of his other movies? Any of them?
Was the Scary Stories the new adaptation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I
new movie that came out like yeah, 5 years ago, maybe.
I turned that on and never finished it. Yeah. So I can't. That's the only one that stuck out to me. I think I've heard of Troll Hunter, but it hasn't made its way into my living room yet.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't familiar with any of his other work. How about you?
I've seen Scary Stories. I've seen The Last Voyage of the Demeter. And actually, I think I've seen part of Troll Hunter, but I don't think I ever finished it. I didn't think The Last Voyage of the Demeter, or I guess either of the movies that I know that I've for sure seen, were perfect. But there was a lot that I really liked about them. And I think, yeah, he's quite a capable filmmaker mm-hmm. and really good at creating atmosphere mm-hmm. and having a vision that he sticks to and is really consistent throughout the films.
Yeah, I didn't see Demeter, but I did see Scary Stories, and I was going to say I didn't love it. I just don't think I didn't like the movie very much. But it wasn't his fault. The script was more my problem with that. The atmosphere, like you said, Allison with a Y, was really on point. So props to him for that. I really want to see Troll Hunter now because I've heard that's like a little more irreverent, I think. Like a little more like sort of black comedy.
Hmm. Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah, which is not what any of these three movies are. Like Jane Doe, Scary Stories, or Demeter. So I'm curious to check that out. But yeah, incredible atmosphere.
But did this come before all those? This is an old
Troll Hunter was first.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then Jane Doe and then Scary Stories and Demeter. Demeter is the most recent one,
mm-hmm.
which was like his, like the telling of Dracula crossing the ocean.
Yeah, because right? there's like the logs in Bram Stoker's Dracula mm-hmm. of the crossing of the ocean. And so it just expands on that, which is why I'm a big fan of Bram Stoker's Dracula. Mm-hmm. I've read it several times. And so I enjoyed it for the most part. I think the issues with it were a script thing. But it was a really well done movie.
Mm-hmm. So this movie takes, as I referenced earlier, kind of an interesting turn. I was not, and again, this is coming from, I had seen it before, but I still wasn't necessarily expecting the supernatural turn. And we'll get into it in the spoiler room, but where I struggle with this one a little more is the resolution to the mystery of what happened to her. And the supernatural stuff is weird to me because it works. And I don't know what else you could have done with this. I don't know where it could have gone other than a supernatural angle that would have satisfied me. But there was something I didn't like it turning into kind of a ghost story. And then another like kind of genre turn a little bit that we'll talk about in the spoiler room. How did the supernatural stuff hit you all?
I mean, I loved it.
Yeah.
That element did for me what I really love out of horror, which is just get under my skin and absolutely freak me out. Mm. I mean, it was like I was getting so stressed out by this movie in like the most satisfying way. So I really liked the supernatural turn. I think I would have been okay if it had been a little bit more crime thriller sort of thing. Like that would have been interesting. But I loved the supernatural element.
Yeah.
And why I say that, like, I don't know what the alternative is I don't know how you create stakes for Tommy and his son in this situation, how you create a threat to them other than supernatural shit starts, like playing with their radio, and we'll talk about it more in the spoiler room.
Yeah. Well, the big storm, there's a big storm that's brewing that seems like inherently could create that stress and put them in a predicament, you know, just weather related and electricity related. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we don't think immediately to attribute that to anything but bad weather.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's that feeling of them being trapped and like, and they're in an old building with old electricity and dead bodies and that need to be refrigerated. Enough. And
like, I don't want to be stuck in a morgue during a storm that has trapped me in, that is like with all these bodies and the electricity is going on. Like, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. That is my real life like horror story that like I think is like plausible, you know? Yeah.
And even before too many supernatural things start happening, Emil Hirsch's character just reacting to the storm itself is like, we should go. You know, I think only the radio had started to be weird, which you could totally pass off as like, you know, from the storm.
Yeah. And as the audience, you're like, yes, go. Like, you're like, should go.
100%. This is where the movie should end.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, on the grand scale of white people reacting to shit in horror movies, I would say they do pretty well, actually. Like, they try to get out at an appropriate time and then are blocked by plot contrivances, i.e., a tree from the storm falling on the one escape that they have from this basement morgue, which is one of those like Midwest like cellar storm doors.
Yeah. Little tornado hatch.
Yeah.
I did love the smoking gun very early in the movie. Emil Hirsch's girlfriend comes down and she's like, she's a cool girl and she wants to see all the dead bodies in the morgue. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out like, no, you don't. Because there's one who blew his fucking head off.
Yeah.
And it's so well used throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Because you only ever see that body under a sheet and it looks fucked up because the head is caved in and that's all you need to see.
Yeah.
They could have shown you the blown open head, but your imagination will do all the work. It's a scary enough concept that surprise, surprise, comes back later in the movie a little bit. And that was really well done.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Were you scared?
Yeah.
Was the movie scary?
Yeah. It really scared me.
I found it spooky.
Yeah. I was sweating. I was schwitzing over
sweating.
Here.
Sweating? Holy shit.
Schwitzing.
It was kind of like one of those situations where, why did I do this? Why did I think this is a good idea? Like, why am I joining a horror podcast?
Just wait. It's going to get so much worse.
I know.
So much worse.
There was a heavy feeling of dread just between the weather and the building itself and this corpse who, you know, she's beautiful. There's nothing scary overtly about her. But as time goes on, it's mysterious and creepy things start happening. And then knowing there's two other dead bodies just hanging out. And Emil Hirsch is new at this. There was so much dread. Like, I was really putting myself in his shoes, just being like, how would I feel? And it was terrible. Mm-hmm. It was just get me out of here with that elevator that just was never could rely on that elevator if you paid me to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was scared.
Spooky movie. Should we review it? Do we have anything else to say before we go to the spoiler room and spoil everything about this movie?
I think we're good.
All right. Well, Allison with a Y, would you view it, cue it, or screw it?
I have to give it a view it. It gave me the feeling that I love from horror movies. Well, I think it's worthy of some critique for sure. It landed for me. It had me crawling out of my own skin and just kind of like mildly dreading watching it. And I view it for sure.
Allison with an I.
I'm a view it, mm-hmm. given that I've seen it four times. I think it's kind of a perfect, I don't want to say it's an intro horror movie because for some people this might be as far as they can go. Right?
It might be too scary for some people, too.
It might be. I guess I'm saying that in the vein of my daughter. It was my daughter's first scary movie. And even hearing her say that, I was like, damn, that's kind of a jump, you know?
Yeah.
But I think for those of us who enjoy horror and who have a little more bandwidth, I think it's one of the more perfect sort of entry-level horror movies. it's not terribly gory. Mm-hmm. There is that feeling of dread and there's suspense, you know, you don't know what's going to happen until it does. And then even if you, there's no way you could have predicted that. So you get a little bit of everything without too much of anything. But yeah, I think this one's going to stand the test of time for me. How about you, Patrick?
I'm going to go cue it. There's a lot to admire here. As we've said, the atmosphere is incredible. Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch make the most of a challenging setup, being basically the only characters that we interface with for most of this movie. It was creepy. I felt that dread and that fear, but we're going to get into it in the spoiler room. The resolution to this just didn't do it for me. I don't have a, you know, when Chris was on the show, he'd do Chris rewrites the movie. I don't have a Chris rewrites the movie of how this could have been done better. I think it's a hard concept to pull off a satisfying ending to, and the ending to this did not quite do it for me. But there is a lot to admire, so I'll give it a cue. We are going to reveal everything that happens, what actually happened to Jane Doe, in the spoiler room, spoiler morgue, in just a minute. But before we go there, I'll encourage you to go to everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. If you love this podcast, we got merch out there. Just click on the merch store link and you can get a t-shirt or coffee cup or all kinds of shit with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art that I designed on it. Go to your podcast provider of choice and leave us a review. We love to see that feedback and it helps people find the show. We'd also love to talk to you on social media. Allison with a Y, do you want to give us a little social media spiel again?
Yeah, you can find us at Amoncast, E-H-M-O-N, cast, on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, YouTube, and we are now on TikTok at Amon Podcast, because those motherfuckers wouldn't give me Amoncast.
Took our handle. We're going to sue. But yeah, we'd love to see you out there. Allison is doing the Lord's work, creating fun videos like the one you might have seen last week that introduced our new cast to you. And we're going to keep more of that coming your way. Also, forgot to mention this last episode, but come hang out with us on Discord. We have a really beautiful Discord community. We've got folks from all over the country, all over the world who love horror and love talking not just about this podcast, but about horror movies and books and all kinds of horror media, whatever you can imagine. We're having delightful, respectful, fun, warm, just the best conversations on Discord. And a link to that is in the show notes. All right, it's storming outside, and I was going to say we have to head down to the spoiler morgue, but I think we're already stuck. I think we're in the spoiler morgue already. I think that tree fell.
And the elevator's not working.
Yeah, the elevator's not working. We have no choice. We're in the spoiler morgue, and we're going to reveal all the spoilers to the autopsy of Jane Doe in just a minute. See you there. Alright, it is pouring rain outside. This storm is just out of control. A tree has fallen over the door to the spoiler room, the spoiler morgue, and we are down here ready to discuss all the spoilers about the autopsy of Jane Doe. So, what are the spoilers? She's a witch.
She's a witch.
She's a witch.
From like 400 years ago.
From like Salem witch trials.
Yeah, Salem witch trials.
Maybe 500.
Yeah.
And we 400?
400.
Yeah, there we go. And we discover this because for some reason, that actually isn't super clear from what I remember. They peel back her skin.
Yes.
And find that shit is tattooed inside her skin.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically a passage from the Bible that refers to witches. And that's how we find this out, right?
To be fair, the passage from the Bible was on a cloth that had her tooth in it.
That was fucked up.
That was in her stomach or something.
Yeah. Yeah, they found it in her intestine.
So that was one of the first things that they found that mm-hmm. they couldn't make heads or tails of. And they quickly, like, cast this cloth aside and were like, it's whatever.
Yeah, that's when it started to get, like, weird.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So because she's this supernatural being, other things start to happen within the morgue that tips us off to her presence being bad.
Yep. And specifically, they were like, okay, so all of these other, you know, quote, witches weren't really witches. What if it's not so much that she had been a witch in life, but in the way that they had killed her, she became a witch in death?
Right.
That they had cursed her somehow.
Oh, right, because I forget which of the two of them says, like, all the witches tried in the Salem witch trials were, of course, famously innocent.
Yeah.
Right.
A witch trial is a witch trial for a reason. We have that expression now.
And they're like, they made her in death the very thing that they had feared in life.
Right.
Which was, that was dope.
It was a cool concept. It felt a little half-baked to me. It was like, okay, how?
Yeah, you know? I still struggle with that. Like, make that make sense for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they pieced it all together was cool. You know, they found, I think the tattooing had like, oh no, when they finally went back to the cloth, they spread it out and they found some Bible passages there, like Leviticus.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It was on the cloth.
Yeah. So they go to the Bible, which they conveniently had, which I thought was actually kind of cool. You know, like if you're going to be in this business, you're going to need to be honoring different religions. And,
it made sense.
Yeah, totally. But they flipped to the part of Leviticus that this cloth referenced, and it made reference to the witches, mm-hmm. which, cool. But yeah, I mean, they pieced it all together slowly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the meantime, we have, you know, I mentioned the guy before, the corpse who had shot himself in the face, because that corpse gets up and starts walking around with its weird caved in ass face and a sheet covering it and a bell jingling whenever he walks around, because old school coroner trick is to tie a bell to the corpse's toes in case you happen to put somebody on a slab who was just comatose and not actually dead. Fine. That's fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was a fun little scare moment.
Yeah, the first time I heard that fucking bell, I lost my shit. I was like, was that the fucking bell?
Was that the bell? Why he did that?
Yeah, I think when they first rolled out that corpse with the bell, I think before he even explained it, you were like, why does he have a bell on there?
Yeah.
And I was like, because it's going to come back.
Yeah.
It's going to be a thing.
And I was like, oh, I'm going to hate it. Yeah. I'm going to hate it. Yeah. In like the best way, because it's going to be so unsettling.
Yeah.
He explained it to the girlfriend, who we can talk about her fate, I guess.
Oh, right.
Comes back to retrieve her boyfriend, who said he would take 2 to 3 hours to just finish up this autopsy that he thought would be straightforward. And God damn it, she came back. But somehow he was hallucinating that she looked like one of the corpses that had reimagined itself through Jane Doe's evil presence.
Yeah.
And he axed her.
Yeah.
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 So sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's like an example to me of where the supernatural stuff kind of goes too far for me.
Yeah,
it's
I agree. That was a moment that was a bridge too far for me.
Yeah. I was like, this character was barely necessary in the first place, let alone to come back just to die.
Right.
To traumatize. And also, nothing really happens with that from there.
Right.
Like, the Emil Hirsch character moves on from it almost immediately. There's not really any lasting repercussions or trauma from that moment for him. And it just felt a little cheap, I guess.
There was a moment late in the movie where I thought maybe she was a red herring, like that he hadn't actually killed her.
I wondered that too.
Yeah, because he had hallucinated. They had both hallucinated so many things. And so it puts the viewer in a place of what's real, what's not. And there was a moment where I was like, okay, wait, maybe his girlfriend isn't dead. You know, maybe he did kill the corpse that had come back from the dead. And it unfortunately wasn't the case. So, yeah, her character seemed to only serve the purpose of that, and then maybe as a red herring, but maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an odd choice to me. I'm trying to remember what other supernatural things happen. Like, there's a fire that sort of suddenly...
Yeah, oh, that's bizarre.
CGI, interesting. CGI fire that engulfs the morgue.
Yeah, yeah, they're trying to destroy her corpse, and so they throw flammable accelerant
stuff. Oh, right, yeah, he drenches it in flammable chemicals.
Yeah, and set her on fire, but then that... through paranormal supernatural abilities, the entire like room starts to go up in flames. So then they have to like put that out, and as they're putting that out, the flames on her go down, and lo and behold, she's not burned,
she's unscathed once again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fire scene, I was kind of like, I did an eye roll, but again, it's like typical horror stuff that you see. It's like bad CGI, but
yeah,
you know,
I think it stood out to me because for the most part, the rest of the movie looked so good, and where CGI is used, it's not conspicuous, and that fire was just like, I'm not looking at a real thing here, and it just stood out like a sore thumb compared to everything else.
I think the other part that maybe wasn't needed, the same with the girlfriend's death, was the cat dying.
That was... Why did the cat have to die?
Yeah. It had a good name, too. What was the cat's name? Does anybody remember now?
Stanley.
Such a good cat name.
Stanley.
I mean, as the owners of cats named Colin Robinson and George Michael appreciate a cat that just has, like, kind of an old English man name, you know?
And Stanley. Ironically, unironically, my cat's Salem. So funny. I think there's an app that you can use. There's a website called Does the Dog Die in This?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
For people that are sensitive to those things. But I don't think there's a Does the Cat Die in This? But that was...
I think they do, like, any animal. Like, that's the name of the website. But I think they will tell you, like, if any animal dies in the movie,
right.
Basically.
I think
it's a very thorough database, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Like, you can look up pretty much anything on there and find out.
Yeah.
Which is useful.
Yep. Unnecessary, though.
Yeah.
I think it was meant to add to, like, they had lost the wife-mother figure, and she was spoken highly of, then the cat, then the girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I think it was a setup for the ultimate ending where, spoiler, no one survives.
Yeah.
Yeah, so does somebody want to break that down? Because I don't know. I felt... Again, I don't know. This movie is a little frustrating for me because I'm so into it up until a certain point, and then it's messy. To me, it felt messy, and I forget exactly what all happens at the end.
I can understand that. So Brian Cox's character basically realizes what is actually going on with her, or what he thinks is going on with her, and that's that she needs a sacrifice, basically, to like finally be at rest. That's what he becomes convinced. And he kind of like has this almost a Bly Manor moment, you know, the it's you, it's me, it's us moment, where he's like looking in her eyes and basically saying like, you can take me. Mm-hmm. Like I will be your sacrifice. Cause at like this point, like how much more does he have to live for? You know, he feels like his son is capable enough on his own. And so he's just like, but don't hurt my son. Don't hurt my son.
I think, just to add something, I think that they had since realized that she could feel everything that was happening to
her. Yes, that's right.
Like that her neurons were still active in her brain.
Right.
So while they were performing this autopsy, she was actually in pain.
That's right. What they thought, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
So he offered himself as a sacrifice.
He was like, very empathetic.
I'll take that pain from you.
Right, because that's one of the big revelations is like they cut her open and way more blood comes out than really should. And they're like, she's still alive in some way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they have that moment. And then so he offers himself up basically as a sacrifice. He dies.
Well, so as he's taking on her wounds, wounds begin to heal, right? So her wrists and ankles are unbroken. Her eyes, the cloudiness of her eyes clears up. She's got brown eyes and not gray eyes like they thought she did. And so it's working.
Yeah, you think it's like, oh, okay, so like this really is the thing. This is the thing that's going to like break the curse.
That's right.
Spoiler alert, it doesn't get broken. Emil Hirsch's character, as he's trying to escape...
Talking to the police.
So you think like there is like this moment and he he loses his balance and falls over the banister mm-hmm. of the staircase and dies.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be fair, like, as much as, I don't know, I feel like this is where a lot of horror movies kind of end, where it's just like, well, we don't really know how to get ourselves out of this. From like a human element, I was like, would I want to survive that night?
Right. No kidding.
And the answer is, I don't think I would. If I watched my girlfriend get axed, my dad die, that's my whole world. Fuck, take me too. Yeah. I'm good.
I think that was intentional. Yeah.
You certainly can't continue on in the family business.
Right. And it's just like, how would that have looked for Emil Hirsch's character as well? They would have probably thought that he killed them.
That's right. Yeah. Well, how does he explain the axe and the girlfriend without his dad being there as a witness? Exactly. No one would believe a supernatural thing. No one survived. They all die in the end.
Yeah. And then we wind up in the ambulance, where Jane Doe is being taken away because the sheriff is like, I want this out of my county.
Yeah,
that's
maybe
right.
the smartest person in the movie. He's like, I want this as far away from here as possible. And one of the supernatural happenings we didn't talk about is the radio keeps switching to play a certain
old-timey
song.
Scary old-timey song.
Yeah, that I was not familiar with. But it comes on in the ambulance, and I didn't love this either. But like her toe twitches a little at the end, and you hear the jingling bell again, even though there's no bell attached to her. And it's, I mean,
fine. Great setup for a two, but there was no two.
Yeah,
I think my biggest issue with the ending, because this is a view for me. I did overall love it. My biggest issue is that I feel like they should have been able to break the curse. Like, what is the point?
That would have been much more satisfying.
And if they had still all died, but they had broken the curse, I think I would have been so much more satisfied with that ending. But it just felt cheap.
Yeah.
For them to be like, joke, ha ha ha, she's still doing her thing. And it doesn't make sense to me, thinking about like, who were these victims? And we're getting into like the historical aspect, but who are these victims of the Salem witch trials? Mm-hmm. Like, these are not necessarily like people. Like, I mean, they said like, she wasn't a witch. She was made a witch in death. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that bothered me was, it's like, why would this woman who was made to suffer caused so much unnecessary suffering with people who are trying to help her?
I kept thinking that too. Like, leave the dad alone. He's a good guy. These are the good guys.
They're trying to figure it out. They're trying to help you. And in the end, the dad like thinks he is like helping her. Brian Cox thinks he is helping her. And so that.
And then it just like succumbs to horror movie logic instead, where it's like, oh, it would be like scary and cool if he popped back up after he died.
Yeah.
And it would be kind of sick and scary and cool if like Emil Hirsch died. I don't know. It's just like, for a movie that mostly is very admirable in how it relies on atmosphere, it just falls back on kind of tropey shit at the very last minute. And I think that was what really disappointed me more than anything, even more than like the specifics of like the reveal that she was a witch. I think I might have dealt with that better if not for all the other just kind of standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps unnecessarily violent tropes that come up at the end. And I mean, you know, like you said, Allison, with a Y, breaking this curse would be so much more interesting. Mm-hmm. And I'm envisioning now like the Mike Flanagan ending where it's like there's some emotional like interaction with the witch or what, I don't know.
Or like the Exorcist ending.
That
felt satisfying for everything that we endured
as a
watcher to see, okay, well, at least somebody comes out of this okay.
Yeah.
But we didn't get an Exorcist ending.
Like, yeah, even if it would just be like her released finally.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But now she's trapped again.
Yeah.
It's fucked all the way around.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's just a lot of promise here that doesn't quite pay off. But if, at least from my perspective, if you can just anticipate that and enjoy the first hour or so and prepare to lower your expectations a little bit for the ending, it's solid.
Yeah. Again, I think it's a good starter horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you get a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Tropes and all. I mean, that's part of it, right?
Yeah.
You can't love the genre and and not appreciate that you're going to get some dumb shit.
Yeah.
That's true.
Boy, oh boy.
Dumb shit.
Boy, oh boy. Well, since I think we're about at the end point of our discussion of this movie, and since you just mentioned dumb shit, somebody ask me what we're watching next.
Patrick, what are we watching next week?
Oh, the cackle.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean, I got to hand it to you both for picking, like, films.
Oh, no.
For your first two movies. Like, these are both, I mean, even if you don't like one or both of the first two movies we did, Bone Tomahawk and Jane Doe, the craftsmanship is like you can't really argue with it. They're well mm-hmm. made. So I was like, there's so much bullshit on Netflix. There's so much trash we're gonna be watching. So I have to pick something trashy. So we are watching A Haunted House.
Oh,
I've kind of been wanting to watch this. I'm not gonna lie.
It's like knockoff Scary Movie.
Yeah.
Oh basically. My God. I love this movie.
Oh, have you seen it?
I think I have. It's been a really long time. Wait, this movie came out in 2013. Oh, yeah, wow, this is an older one.
Allison with an I, you have Netflix up on your phone right now, actually. So read us the Netflix synopsis of it, as we usually do to preview the next movie.
This spooky spoof on Scary Movies follows a young couple settling into a new home where an evil spirit and horrifyingly hilarious antics await.
Oh, is this supposed to be like a spoof of like Paranormal Activity?
Yeah.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yes, I have seen this movie. It has been a very long time. I probably saw it when it came out in 2013, so I have zero recollection of it. But perfect. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled with your choice.
Oh, good. All right.
This is great.
Lighthearted.
It is lighthearted.
Yeah, I, you know, I like representing the full spectrum of everything that's out there. So I was like, yeah, A Haunted House. Let's do it. That we had a great time when we did, I think it was like Scary Movie 4 or something a few years ago. Mm. So we're doing comedy next time.
Great.
So before we wrap this up, again, your friendly reminder to hit Every Horror Movie on Netflix.com, hit that merch store link to get your Every Horror Movie on Netflix t-shirt or coffee mug or whatever floats your boat. Check us out on social media at
AmonCast on Instagram, YouTube, Blue Sky, Facebook, and AmonPodcast at TikTok.
Perfect. And also come hang out with us on Discord. The link to that is in the show notes. And last but not least, follow us on your podcast provider of choice and leave the show a review. We love to see the feedback, and it helps people find the show. That's all we've got for this week. Thanks for joining us for this discussion of The Autopsy of Jane Doe. We will be back in 1 week with a discussion of A Haunted House, a spooky spoof, as Netflix calls it. For Every Horror Movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
I'm Allison with a Y.
Allison with an I.
And we'll see you next time.